Welcome to For the Love of Conversation, the podcast that grew out of 3 Minute Storyteller, where we believe conversations connect us and social change begins with the stories we tell. At 3 Minute Storyteller, we share digital stories, video snippets of intimate, messy, expansive conversations with a wildly eclectic bunch of artists, scientists, leaders of all stripes, all who are legendary change agents. Some you may know, and hopefully many you don't. This podcast is the opportunity to bring you into the full conversation. I'm Shannon Mannon, along with my husband Mike and our VW bus Scarlett, who we've outfitted into an awesome mobile storytelling unit. We invite you into the full conversation with us. We're so glad you're along for the ride.
Within a few minutes of meeting Xavier, who's been performing and recording under the name Fantastic Negrita for the last few years now, we went pretty deep. Partly that was a necessity. He was set to kick off Philadelphia's Exponential Festival in about 45 minutes, and it was wonderful of him to give up that sanctum, that precious preparation time to talk to me. But the other part of it was I think we saw each other. It's kind of rare as an interviewer when an artist lets down that nightly wall that they have to necessarily put up as they transform into a rock star. You can't just walk into that environment being yourself. It doesn't work that way. But I can't remember talking to someone with as genuine a feel about him. It felt like he was going to walk out the door and play a few songs in a half-empty bar, not the 15,000-seat amphitheater that awaited him. The 15 minutes we talked wasn't nearly enough, for me certainly, but I hope you enjoy this brief talk. I really, really did, as I think you'll hear. One of the things we talked about was how we share an optimism and a gratitude about where we are. Middle-aged guys trying to dig into something. With him, it's his fascinating new album called Please Don't Be Dead, which is the follow-up to The Last Days of Oakland that won a Grammy last year. The new record is, as he says here, all about the idea of America and how we're in an ugly spot right now. But there's still beauty all around, and we're going to turn this thing around. Even though every day so many of us wake up to read about the divisiveness that's surging, the name-calling, the belittling, he's still so glad to be here, fighting the good fight. One crowd a night, one listener at a time. I get that. I've been thinking about the summer of 1968 a lot these last few months. I've always kind of been fascinated with it from the time I was a little kid. I remember my dad telling me about it. The riots, the DNC in Chicago, Vietnam, the assassinations, the ugliness. So when Xavier mentioned how he had thought of that year, when those records that came out in the middle of that turmoil, and how he wanted his new record to sound like that, I knew exactly what he was talking about. It was a scary, scary time for America. I can still feel my dad's bewilderment and awe of it when he retold it. And it's a scary, scary time now. But we're going to make it through it. Listen and read about this one artist's story, this one man's story, and you'll feel that too. Left for dead, creatively and literally. And he rose. We're going to get through it. He's us in a lot of ways. He's all of us. You gave it up. After your accident and everything, you gave it up. Well, and yeah, a lot of people do, but...
What I did is I went kind of into this underground thing, phase, and I lived in South Central LA, like amongst a bunch of gangs and shit. You know, and the El Salvadorian gangs and the Mexican gangs, and just like I lived like some like hardcore, like underground artists. I hooked up with the Afropunk movement when it was in its infancy.
Not really a movement yet, right?
Yeah, it was just like people in a basement.
Right.
And I did that. I lived pretty hard for 8 years, and then I quit for 5 years.
Okay.
It was a lot of years, yeah. I quit for 5 years to move back to Oakland and become a cannabis farmer, because that really interested me, you know, and I wanted to learn about people, so I became a farmer, you know.
What? So what was the emotion, though, of giving it up?
Oh, it's happiness. I sold every piece of gear I had. Well, I'm extreme a little bit. I'm a bit like the political landscape in America. I'm like, when it's done, it's done, and I'm all the way. And people are like, hey, man, the song. I'm like, I don't even listen to music. Get out of here. Man, you want to play? Oh, my God, I don't even play, man. I'm like bragging about how I don't play. Man, I go sit in the room, I just look at a keyboard, you know. So when I was done, I was done.
And then when you, because a lot of people quit, but very few are able to make it back, and not just make it back, but like make it back.
Well, I really respect the arts, and I feel like if you don't have anything to say, then shut up. And, I had a child, you know, that I've spoken about very publicly, and he became the teacher. I couldn't put him to sleep one day, and he was just cranky, and the only thing I couldn't sell was this cheap guitar made in Thailand. Nobody would give me any money for it, so I just kept him under his bed for years. And I looked at him, and I thought, well, I picked it up, and I played it, and he went nuts. And I thought, wow, it scared me. I felt all the chills, and I'm like, this something just happened. And I was being taught by this little kid, and it was like, hey, I don't have any baggage. I just love the vibration of those strings in that wood. That's amazing. Can we do that again and again? And so then I just started playing songs for him every night. And it was a slow walk back to music.
Yeah. Were you writing all along?
Nah, not really, no. Just nothing. I was done. I was a, you know, marijuana farmer and a collective. I joined a collective and we grew weed and we owned an art gallery and helped other artists kind of do things. But I think at the art gallery, I was like, oh, pick up an instrument and play a little bit.
Yeah.
But I was more into like the topless bartender thing. That was,
yeah.
It was just fun, you know. I was having fun again.
You still had outlets.
Yeah, I was fun and I wanted to say that I wanted to help empower other artists. I love the art gallery.
So, this new record is like, the way I hear it anyway, it's like this riot of creativity.
I like that.
You know,
you get it.
Like it's just kind of like you can feel it, just kind of like bubbling up and over. You know, and like was it that in the right?
I mean, I have to say, I do 100 interviews, and you understand what it is. It was a fucking riot of creativity. It was a middle finger, and it was a, you know, superhero power to the wave of hate that I don't like that's coming, and it's like, well, I'm an artist. That's my weapon. I got a podium here. How do you get everybody under the umbrella? Let's see. I think like even these crazy neo-Nazi people, I bet they like Johnny B. Goode. Remember, I just kept thinking of that. Who hates Johnny B. Goode? And I thought, this album's got to be a riot of creativity. I'm going to use that. Sorry. And it was like the riff. The riff, man, in E. It's got to be about that riff and the chant. And I was like, these are the things that are primitive, and they're like, they're in this DNA that's deep inside of us, beyond all the barriers and the race and the gender and all that. There's this thing that we have in common. And I thought I wanted the album to be that, and I wanted it to be courageous, and I wanted it to shut down any talk of like, oh, you won the Grammy, and like becoming this thing that I always didn't like, becoming like, recognizable, becoming like this hot, this you know, this ivory tower that like this person sits there and they have this repressed fantasy of how we should all fit into their thing, their machine. And I was like, I always wanted to, I always didn't like it because it didn't make me feel good. And I saw how it made other people not feel good. And that's what I always wanted to fight against, that. And I wanted the album to just be like bold. And I thought, I'm 50. It's Channel 1968. And so I was like, Electric Ladyland, the White Album, all these albums. I'm like that. Like, you know, as bold as that and not giving a fuck like those albums.
That's all. My favorite song on the record, and I'm bad at this, don't even know the name, but like, it starts with the, you know, some simple acoustic chords, and you're thinking, oh, I'm going to peg this guy down. And then you've got this almost Middle Eastern chant.
Oh, you're talking about, I'm bad at it too. A Boy Named Andrew.
Yes.
Because I have weird titles for my songs.
You do. I wanted to ask you about that too. But like, it's so like simple and soulful. And then all of a sudden you get hit with the left hook.
Right.
And it's like, I don't know if it was purposeful or not. It sounds like it was. But those two mixtures of like, this can exist all in the same place, make you feel something. That's pretty, that was pretty powerful to me.
I wanted to feel like, why did I get into this? Even as a kid, remember No One Ruined You Yet? And you're like, 17, you want to play the guitar, and I'm like, look at this, what I did. I wanted to feel that again, and that's what I got back into it, being taught by this, you know, this little creature. And he was like, hey man, this feels great. And I'm like, I want to be that. And if I can't be that, then I'll quit again. And I think there's a lot of freedom of that. And I was, just as like when I was producing the record, I thought, shit man, like, I want people to feel like that. Whoa, I want you to feel that, and I want you to feel like there's something we can sing that line together. And everyone can sing that line. And I say, get in touch, man. Get deep down inside everybody. Get in touch with your immigrant blood. Wherever you're from.
Yeah.
Ireland, you know, Czech Republic, Russian, Ghanaian, Mexican. Let's get in touch with that. Because that's what made us great.
And I'm guessing that Please Don't Be Dead is also like kind of America to you too.
Yeah, it was I was in Europe and people kept asking me what's wrong, and I was like, what's wrong? Then I got it. I was like, you know, America's a diet. It's just a diet. And you get up late at night and we pig out on donuts and cookies. We go, fuck, we fucked up. Let's get back on the diet. So it makes me understand and forgive and be a little bit more supportive and loving, but still critical. Because I want us to live up to all the things that we say we are, because, man, it's one of the greatest ideas ever.
Yeah.
And I think we can. I'm optimistic about it.
Yeah, I am too. And I think it's the hard part is getting through this right now, where it's like able to do something with your anger.
Yeah.
In a way that's like, it's going to move something.
You're
right?
Doing it right now.
Yeah. I mean, we're trying, you know, like
we're all doing it. We're on the front line.
I wanted to talk to you because, you know, I do a lot of musicians, but for me, it's, we're really interested in people who have gone through the shit and come out on the other end and have a story to tell about it.
Fuck.
And every musician does, because it's a shit life in a lot of ways. But I mean, the real deep kind of stuff and emerge from it. And your story just, it fascinated me when I read the Three Lives, piece that y'all put together.
It's funny, yeah.
It really resonated with me, you know, because I think everybody's got that that chance to have multiple incarnations of themselves, but very few people actually dive into that.
I never knew I had a story till the guy in my collective just one day, just before I wasn't playing music, he goes, you know what? I just realized, man, you have a story. I'm like, what's the story? And he starts breaking it down. I go, wow, that sounds crazy. But I think all of us have a story, and I think all of us are valuable. All of us. But if I start talking to you or your sister or somebody, there's something like, whoa, really? Grandpa did that? I mean, we all have that. And I think that coming back now, I feel like, oh, now I'm a contributor. I really don't want anything. Right. And that's what I like about this. I just picked up my guitar one day. I went to go play on the street. I didn't want to be a pop star. I don't want to write hit records. I have no interest in that. I wanted to do something for the community that I lived in. And I thought, if I go out and play on the streets, it's a really good way to find out if I'm contributing or not, you know, based on people, if I'm connecting with people, because I understood that that's what being a human being was all about, is that we have this connection and we go, yeah. And we put our arm around each other and we walk off into the sunset. And That's it. I don't know. That's what I...
It's those simple things like, you know, the giving is everything.
Oh, it's everything.
Like, it's so simple, but it's so, like, you... You probably know Josh Mondo Cosmo,
oh, yeah,
from L.A., right?
Love him, yeah.
So I talked to Josh, I guess, about a year ago, and I'm walking by, and he's playing as I'm walking over here on the other stage.
Yeah.
And I hear this guy go, man, this guy says thank you a lot.
Right. That's like, great.
And that dude means it, too. He literally...
He means it, man,
because he's been through it, too, man. Yeah. And like, he does. He says it a million times from stage, but he means like every single one of them.
Hey,
it's like,
gratitude's a religion.
How
man.
Great is that?
Well, I think when you're busy practicing gratitude, man, there's really no letdown. Because you're just thankful for everything. I'm like, oh, I'm breathing. I was on a machine once. I remember that. Ooh. I remember when I couldn't even take a shit, and people put that thing underneath me, and they wiped my ass for me. And I remember going to the bathroom, my hands are messed up, and they take off my shit. I remember all that. And it really, gratitude, that's it. Get rid of all that stuff.
So, I wanted to ask you a little bit, speaking of gratitude, what's independent radio and this AAA thing that XPN and what's it meant to you?
For some kids who may be too young, I say, I'm like, what's that singer in The Godfather, Vince Fontaine, or what was his name?
Yeah, I know what
you're
talking
about.
The Frank Sinatra knockoff.
That's me, and independent radio, NPR, AAA, that's my Godfather. And I'd do anything for my Godfather, just like he said in the movie, because they're just like, have been my support network. Bob Boylan was walking by at the festival yesterday, someone was interviewing me, I was like, oh, wait a minute, yeah. I'm like, this is the reason why people know about me, this guy. It's like, I'm the guy, you know, and I'm like, okay. So it means the difference between eating and not eating. It means so much to me, and I'm indebted, and like he said in the movie, I do. When I saw that movie again, just I was like, wow, that's me. Yes, you know, he's crying, like, shut up, be a man. He's like, because, you know, I'd do anything for my guy. Some
awesome.
Kids may not. They're like, huh?
Nah, they'll get it. We'll write
Google
it up.
We'll
write
it
up for them.
Yeah.
All right, so one last one. I'll let you go. You're writing some dark material, but you sing it in such a jubilant place. You sing it in such a way that, like, you can feel it, like I said, bubbling out of you. Was that always you? I mean, did you always have, even back in the first incarnation, did you have that passion that's like, this is just a joyous, joyous thing that I'm doing?
You know what? I had the drive of my immigrant daddy, alleged immigrant. Like, he was from so many places. I just had that drive. He just gave me that. I think it's in the DNA. My dad was born in 1905. And, you know, my mom was 33 years younger than him. I mean, we had to have a lot of drive for, number one, to keep up with that relationship and to produce, 14 kids. And just 1905, being a very intelligent, eclectic black man at that time, that could get you hung from a tree. So I just, he had a lot of drive. He was a guy that was like, you get out there, man, you do it. You know, you don't need to... you know, we're not begging to get here, we belong here. And this whole optimism thing, like, we're gonna make it and it's gonna happen. I think I got it from him with all of his faults, and there was a lot of faults, but,
that was a good one.
Yeah, that was a good one. I think I always was like, I can do it, I wanna do it. I always was an outsider. I feel like I call my followers now Negrito Nation. I feel like we're the outcasts, the people that they said couldn't do it, we weren't good enough and all that. I always kind of felt like that because that was the case.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, thank you.
Right on, brother.
Thank you. And with that, he buttoned up his badass Nehru jacket and went out and slayed a bunch of sunburned festival goers. Fantastic Negrito's last two records are great, and you should get them. But even more importantly, when he gets back from Europe, where they are now, go see him and his band. The passion, the intensity, it just pours out of him. Thanks for listening, and enjoy these long summer days.
We'll be coming at you with some fascinating guests in the next few weeks. There might even be a movie star thrown in there. And our podcast is going to hit all the podcast outlets soon. You'll be able to download all the long conversations we've had since the beginning of this year. And you'll be able to get them on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever. And hopefully, you'll be binging on hope as this summer winds down with us. We're so glad you're along for the ride.